This is Pat Bode, host of 900 Views. This episode with creative entrepreneur and wreathmaker Dashera Bahana was recorded prior to the death of George Floyd. But Dashera has generously agreed to help me update this episode by connecting again. So the final minutes of this episode were recorded on June 29th of 2020. I hope you'll join Dashera and me for the entirety of this episode. Coming to you by way of the not-for-profit Mainframe Studios at 900 Kiowa in downtown Des Moines, this is 900 Views, a podcast about building community through the arts as we build an arts community. I'm your host, Pat Bode, and today, self-described creative entrepreneur Dashera Bahana is on the line with me. After earning a Bachelor of Arts in Journalism and pursuing a graduate degree at ISU, she spent more than 10 years in corporate America. But in September 2016, she decided to throw caution to the winds and Design Fetish, her company, was born. It's now part of Mainframe Studios. Her wreaths and florals are found in local hospital boutiques, gift shops, hotels, and restaurants. And community could be Dashera's middle name. Habitat for Humanity, Youth Emergency Shelter and Services, After School Arts Program, and Blank Children's Hospital are a few of the organizations Design Fetish has worked with closely. And Dashera Bahana was elected to the Ankeny School Board in October of last year. That is quite a list of accomplishments and organizations with whom you've worked. And you got started with, I think, a really intriguing interpretation of social media. If I understand this correctly, you loaded up a little red wagon with wreaths. Am I right?
I did. That is exactly right.
And what did you do with that little red wagon?
Well, you know, the idea began, and it wasn't a very planned intention to start a business with wreaths. It began out of me noticing how many people didn't have a wreath on their door. My girls and I were having a picnic. I noticed it, and I said, oh, I could change that. But at the time, my twins were two. They might have been three, and my youngest was one. So I had a full load.
Yeah.
But somehow I worked my way into this this notion that I could beautify at least my street. And I just began to scour the garage to see what I could use. You know, once I had created a few wreaths, and it was a wagon my mom had bought for my daughter. So that's kind of where that came from. That's how the whole wagon thing began.
Was it really about beautifying of these doors? Or, you know, you have a lot of wonderfully thoughtful themes of gratitude and welcome. I'm wondering what the mix is there overall in terms of your goals.
That's an excellent question. And I don't want to be too lengthy in my answer, but it was as simple as beautifying my neighborhood. You know, I have always wanted to be an entrepreneur, but at the time I was going through a divorce, and I remember at that time thinking, how will I start a business now? Here I am with twin girls and expecting another one. And what helped me to rise out of that funk, because I was in a real one, was practicing gratitude. I assumed it was my mom who sent my sister and I these pamphlets about gratitude one year. And when I began to practice that, it started slowly lifting everything. It wasn't very easy at first, but my sister and I started a challenge of calling each other every morning, listing 10 points of gratitude. And when we started that, we could barely come up with three. So I think that alone, you know, started shifting the way I operated. And maybe a year and a half later, it totally changed my perception about everything. So it wasn't intentional, the correlation between gratitude and then this random idea to go door to door with wreaths. But somehow I believe it was all very connected, and that it, you know, practicing the gratitude allowed me to change and start thinking about life differently, which then led to which led to me being more open, you know. And I, again, I didn't plan for this to be a business, although I always wanted to be an entrepreneur. It just evolved organically on its own. So, yes, it was about beautifying a few homes, but it became my full-time gig, and I love it.
So how's it going now? Because you can't take your wagon door-to-door, and Mainframe Studios is not open to the public right now. And so some of the great things that you've been able to do at Mainframe that I've enjoyed, we'll get into some of those in a little more detail, but just stopping by your studio is always fun. And you've done some great things in the hallways up there. And then I remember back in September, I think it was the fashion show you helped organize. I might have the wrong month, but it was one of those first Fridays. It was one of the most rewarding events at Mainframe, just by virtue of all the energy and creativity involved. So you've
Thank
been a
you.
Big part of, yeah, you're welcome, but it was delightful. So you've been a big part of Mainframe. And now Mainframe's not what it once was, although we have every reason to believe it will be again. But how are you finding opportunities for gratitude in that?
Well, for starters, I have a very wonderful client base. And I do have a presence on social media and online. I have a website. But
we graduated from the Red Wagon?
I did. I graduated from the Red Wagon early by the end of, let's see, that started in September, and I was done with that by November. Part of it was weather. The other part was the idea took off. But I think this, I see it as an opportunity for me to grow my online presence, for me to update my website, and for me to use this as another pivot. And that's how I got here, was being open to when things shift and change. You look at the situation and then you say, what can I do? How can I improve myself? So that's what my attitude is now, and I'm already, you know, in the process of having that website updated. So, you know, I really love our Mainframe events, but I didn't build my business out of having a storefront or even having a social media presence. When I started, it was me in that wagon for a year. So, you know, I hate that this is happening, you know, for so many reasons, but there is good to find in it.
What else are you doing differently besides updating your website? How else is this having an impact on how you live, work, and play?
Well, I have actually, like many people, had a lot more quality time with my family because I've been home with my three girls quite a bit. And during this pandemic, I broke or fractured my big toe. So I was not only home, I was forced to sit down for a little bit while I was there. So that kind of changed my timeline. And now that I'm back at work, I'm starting to research and look at different clients, different opportunities that I didn't have time to do initially. And now I'm looking at how do I reach that audience? How do I rebrand and how do I target a broader group than I've been able to in the past? So I'm just kind of restructuring the business to figure out how to do it on a different scale that isn't so based on in-person contact, because my business has been built out of reaching out to people personally.
With that title you have, creative entrepreneur, would you consider yourself more a creative or an entrepreneur?
Wow, that's a great question. I honestly would consider myself equally both, because since this journey has begun, it's helped me to reflect more on things that existed long before I even had a driver's license. I would go door to door to my neighbors and ask if I could wash their car for extra money. I was raised by a single mom, so I was pretty inventive and thoughtful about ways to accomplish what I needed. And that mind is the same mind I operate out of now. So for that reason, I would say I'm also half entrepreneur and then creative, because I've always looked for ways to do things differently. I've always looked for different ways to make things beautiful. So I can't say I'm more of one than the other.
A good balance.
Yeah. Yeah.
So with the gratitude, the welcome, the new beginnings, these being among your themes, how challenging are you, though, finding it to stay positive? You've talked about the gratitude. You've talked about, you know, looking for these opportunities. But you're still home, at one point with a broken toe, three kids. It's everybody's isolated compared to what they were. You strike me as an extremely social person. After all, your version of social media was a little red wagon. How are you getting along?
You know, one thing about practicing gratitude is that it works in every situation. Now, that doesn't mean that there are many days and times that I pull my hair out, because as you are spending very concentrated time with people you love, you realize the things that you don't love about them. So, you know, that has been a stretch, and I realize I need more personal time. But because of how frantic and crazy my world is when I leave work, and, you know, entrepreneurship means that you wear many titles and many hats. So in that process, sometimes you get lost in it, and then you go home from me and take care of these three girls and everything surrounding that. I needed a moment to just sit down with no expectations. And with this pandemic, it has removed a lot of the networking, a lot of the running around, a lot of things that kept my life so busy. And for that, I'm grateful. You know, I hate how this is happening and what it's doing to the economy and to families and to people who are losing loved ones and jobs. But personally for me, and I don't want to be insensitive, but I needed this moment just to breathe and to assess and to look at the big picture, see where I am with the goals that I had and where I am with the future going forward.
And what conclusions are you coming to?
Well, you know, I mentioned that I wanted to have a different type of presence online. I wanted to rework my business. Ultimately, my vision was to reach larger scale corporations. And that has started because I've been able to grow relationships and have contracts with some restaurants and hotel groups. But now I want to expand that so that I am not as involved in the process and the day-to-day in the same way that I am now. So that's kind of where I am with it. What do I need to do? How can I hire people that will allow me the flexibility in not designing all the wreaths, but, you know, going out and maybe building new accounts and building a team that can assist with that larger goal.
Now, you've had so much community involvement, though, and continue with the Ankeny School Board, for example. How do you see the future for some of these different not-for-profit organizations with which you've been involved? How can you see them breaking through to the other side of this pandemic and being okay, or can you?
I absolutely believe that there's an opportunity for all involved. I will also admit that there will be challenges, and there may be some businesses that don't make it to the other side of this because of the negative impact. Even in that, it's not a negative thing necessarily. I think that my openness to shift gears and to be present and aware has allowed me to move into areas that I never had an interest in, I was never aware of, including building a business based on reach, you know? So it may be room for people to shift and look at other opportunities, look at other ways to create or to reach different audiences or customers that you may not have considered before. And it may be time to shift and change things altogether. You know, I am on the Ankeny School Board, and my sister, who's in education, said, "Now, where did that come from?" You know, and that was a result of what I'm suggesting all of us do now. Just take time to assess and kind of evaluate where we are, what things are important to us, and how can we plug in those areas. What things have we neglected that we didn't have time to explore that we may be able to look into now? So, you know, that's kind of taking all of it in, the businesses that make it over the hurdle, the companies that may need to look at different options.
You know, I asked you earlier if you were more creative or more entrepreneur, and you said, you know, basically you have a foot in both camps. You work at that intersection. In terms of the arts community, To what extent do you have your foot in the arts community versus the business community, or is that also a place where you are kind of a human bridge?
I think that they work together hand in hand, because one thing about it is you have all types of people in need, and one relies on the other. So many of my clients, as I said, are companies that don't have in-house someone to do the things that I can do. So I need to be involved in that world to actually grow the business and cater to the people who need my products. But as far as the arts are concerned, I have plugged into the community in ways that I can share art. The after-school arts program I've been a part of, and I create art with the students there. The Yes Youth Emergency Shelter, I've gone in to do workshops and create art there. I enjoy concerts and plays and all kinds of live things that happen in Des Moines and beyond. And so I can't tell you the percentage, you know, which I'm mm-hmm. most involved in, but they both are interwoven in my world in a way that kind of comprise who I am.
Are you more worried about one community over another, or both the artists and the businesses roughly in the same boat here?
I wouldn't say that they're necessarily in the same boat. I think that one thing for artists is that, and this may apply to businesses, but with artists, depending on what your medium and your scope of what you do, we can tend to isolate ourselves in our own creative world, and we don't explore different outlets and opportunities beyond what we have found that works. And we also don't have a staff and don't always have a budget that allows us to bring people in to do that marketing and advertising for us. So that's something that I'm concerned about, because if people aren't being brought into our studios here at Mainframe, and we aren't looking abroad to figure out how else can we close this gap, then that leaves a lot that is lagging. So yeah, I am concerned about our arts community, because, you know, although everyone is impacted, the artists aren't being paid often if they don't receive the patrons who come and the supporters who are intentional about our small businesses.
What would you like to see the community here do to support the arts, particularly in this interim time?
I would like to see the community shop small. I would like to see them more actively engage with the artists as we promote things on social media and we share what we're doing. Instead of ordering from Amazon, find people and products in the community who still allow for that need to be met. If you're buying Mother's Day gifts, then go to Mainframe's website, go to Mainframe's page, and find the artists and see what things we have that we can offer.
So, DeShera, thanks for joining me again as we catch up with each other following the murder of George Floyd and the continuing activity of the Black Lives Matter movement. Now, we ended our earlier conversation with an appeal from you to support artists during the pandemic, in part by shopping local. But now the question of arts and community kind of takes place with yet another major cultural moment before us. It's taken 400 years to get to this point. So, what is your greatest fear, and what is your greatest hope in this moment?
My greatest fear is that people will continue showing the extremity of their position on the opposite end. So I've recently learned that there have been, you know, they found Black people who were hanging that they've addressed as suicidal, which to me makes no sense. But I think this tension and these racial conversations are bringing people and bringing all of those issues to the surface in a way that is creating a very intense environment. So, you know, that's one of my greatest fears, is that more people will lose their lives and that we won't reach the progressive piece of where we're wanting to go without the loss of more lives and without the undue violence. My greatest hope is that this conversation will spur change in a systemic way, that even once all the protests are done and once all of the heightened media stories stories are done, that enough things will have shifted to where we don't have to have these types of conversations for the next generation. You know, even though it took quite a few years for us to get here and all of these issues have been built on hundreds of years of problems, you know, I hope that we are now at a place where we have to deal with it, address it, and figure out a way past it.
Well, I'm realizing, which is a wonderful, wonderful hope, and I share it with you, realizing that we often talk here on this program about the role of arts and the artists, and you yourself are a creative entrepreneur. What have you found, what role have you found yourself kind of playing, if you will, in the advancement of this movement at this time?
Well, this isn't as much art-related, but in October, in Ankeny, I started a network called Ankeny Community Network, and the intention behind it was to create a safe space for Black and brown people to just be and to exist, because that doesn't, we don't have that in Ankeny, Iowa. And it kind of stemmed from my girls' experience in the schools, which was it wasn't a very positive one. So in the wake of all this transpiring, our organization has found a need for us to speak up even more, because Ankeny hasn't had that. There are lots of protests and lots of rallies and marches happening in Des Moines, but we haven't had that in Ankeny. So this allowed us to start planning events that allow people to plug in and come together. We had a unity rally about 3 weeks ago, and there were about 1,000 people there. So, and in that community, this has allowed us to come together and see that there is more support than was previously understood. But, you know, there also weren't avenues where people can show up, or where they can say, here's how I want to support. Now, show us what we need to do. And, you know, we've been able to provide that opportunity in Ankeny, which is a huge deal. So, you know, that's one area that I have activated more than previously.
Yeah, that's fabulous. Now, what is your expectation of the arts community, though, moving forward? You know, how must the arts and artists participate in the work ahead, and how should they go about doing that?
Well, that's a good question. I will say that in the last couple of days, the Arts Center in Ankeny has decided, and they're looking at promoting Black and brown artists for the upcoming year. So they are looking for artists within Ankeny and the metro area of Des Moines so that they can allow them to have exhibits and to showcase in galleries where that opportunity may not have been possible before. And honestly, as an artist, that is a very hard journey to walk, because it's not a 9-to-5 where you're paid every day based on showing up and clocking in, right? So.
Right.
That can cause a lot of challenges for people who are already undergoing so many other financial things that are systemic, or that may have, for myself, you know, I'm a single mom with 3 children, and I am a floral artist. So at the end of the day, I want to pursue my passion, and I want to be able to operate in the zone of creativity, but I also want to be able to make sure my kids are fed and make sure that we have a place to live. So the more that you're able to have that exposure and to showcase what you do through avenues that bring people who appreciate that, that's huge. So for the Ankeny Arts Center, I applaud and commend them for making sure that they are intentionally inviting and seeking out people who may not even know that that was an option, who may not have otherwise had that opportunity. So that is what I would expect from the arts community, to start opening those doors and not only being open and open-minded, but to start seeking out these people who have had so many doors shut that they are discouraged and they don't see as much potential and possibility there.
That's a really great point. I'm so glad you articulated that so well. Now, what would indicate to you that the community writ large was doing its part to kind of deconstruct and redesign these systems that have been so racist for so long?
I feel like we're already seeing it. You know, I read our statement from Mainframe and the steps that Mainframe is taking to address these issues that they may not have been aware of on this level before. I do believe that there's a certain level of awareness, but I think it's also such a norm that we don't second guess it, you know? And now the conversations that we're hearing are opening our consciousness in a new way. So I read that Mainframe is bringing and seeking out more Black and brown people to join the boards. There was another art community that Mainframe wants to partner with so that they can provide more affordable workspaces and studios for Black and brown mm-hmm. people. And that mm-hmm. is very systemic. That is very tangible. That is very real way for us to bring in more people who aren't married to someone that can support the household's finances while they go out and explore this thing, you know, in their art world. So I, you know, those type of gestures and actions are very bold and are very clearly directed toward bringing people in who were once pushed out. And I'm seeing it in so many ways. And so, you know, from that perspective, I think that those are things that can be done to make sure that we are tearing down the systems by opening the doors to those people who have been closed out and making sure that we invite them in and that we let them know clearly. Not that we just do it in our quiet boardrooms and our executive meetings, but that we go out and we say, hey, we want you here. Maybe in the past that wasn't the case, and maybe we weren't as vocal about it, but we want to make sure that you know that we're looking for you and we're creating a space.
Deshira, what should we have talked about here that we haven't? What else do people need to recognize or know?
I think that it's going to take time. I believe there are so many parts of us and how we function for all these years that we don't even realize are contributing to the problem. So we mm-hmm. have to be more, we can't be very fragile or very sensitive, especially our white counterparts and our white allies. You can't come into the situation assuming what it takes to fix it or what's offensive or what can be harmful to Black and brown people. I think you need to be open and bring humility in, bring compassionate and empathy, because there's so much that we don't know about other people's experience. And that's the case with me too. You know, we just celebrated Pride Month, or we're celebrating Pride Month, and there are just a lot of things that I've learned that I didn't know before. So I just, you know, we need to listen and hear each other out so that we can figure out how to plug in and be an answer to each other's issues.
I really appreciate you taking the time. You're so busy, and then on top of this, you've been so active and doing so much. So to help update this interview, I can't tell you how much I appreciate it. It means a lot. And I would encourage everyone to pay attention to Mainframe's Black Lives Matter statement. I'm going to read just the bullets from it. We confirm our commitment through these initial steps. Mainframe Studios will add Black, Indigenous, and people of color to our board of directors. We'll actively re-examine governance, finance, operational, and tenant policies through an anti-racism lens. Mainframe Studios will enact protocols for including Black, Indigenous, and people of color artists and audiences in First Friday programming. We'll develop a studio rent subsidy program for those artists with the understanding that economics plays a large role in Americans' oppression of those artists. And Mainframe Studios will pursue partnership with local arts organizations to implement a studio program for Black, Indigenous, and people of color artists that provides studio space, supplies, and mentorship. Those are some pretty good bullets, I think. And if I'm hearing you right, Deshira, you agree?
Yes, I do. You know, one thing I shared at our rally is that, and a lot of people are not familiar with it, but it's called the Black Text. And I don't have it word for word, but it says, in essence, that Black people have to work twice as hard to get half the distance. So if our white allies are meeting us in that place so that we can get to some of the things that we have been oppressed from having, that closes, that helps to close the gap. So I feel that that statement from Mainframe is a huge step toward that, and it makes me so proud. It does. I can't even tell you words for how it makes me feel that that is being acknowledged and addressed.
Well, I thank you, and I appreciate again your time and your commitment, your passion, and all your really great hard work. And again, we want to thank Mainframe Studios for making this program possible and for all that they have done. And they really do have a pretty exemplary statement here that I hope people will go to the Mainframe Studios and check out.
And I should be sure to note that Mainframe Studios is likely closed to the public at the time you're listening to this, but Dashera Bohanna is available online, www.bybydashera.com.
And as always, I want to thank my collaborator, Alex Cooney, and the folks at Mainframe Studios, particularly founder Justin Mandelbaum and executive director Siobhan Spain. And with that, I hope you've enjoyed this issue of 900 Views, and I hope you will take all of Dashera's words to heart. Thank you for listening.